Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
When you say it is possible to perform eternal pious deeds, then you say it is possible to perform eternal pious deeds accidentally. Vaishnava Das, all is an accident. Even the path of karma is like that. It was by accident that the individual soul first fell into the cycle of karma. What was that chance accident? The followers of Karma Mimamsa claim that karma has no beginning. But the truth is that there is a root from which karma has grown. In the individual soul's aversion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the accident that is the root of karma. As that is believed to be an accident, so eternal pious deeds may also be believed to be chance accidents. So the Prabhupada mentions that because the living entity becomes envious of the Supreme Lord, so that is what gets us into this world. Is that Krishna's enjoying, he's things are running the way he likes and he's enjoying the situation. And so then the living entity is thinking why they should not be the enjoyer. And so because of this, then that is the cause of the karma, that brings one into the material realm. And then if one appreciates the place, then one stays. So by observation one can tell that a lot of individual souls appreciated the facilities being offered in the material world. Therefore, then there's so many living entities here. Otherwise, if it hadn't been so popular, then we wouldn't see so many people here.
Right. All right, so someone may say that they appreciate it so much because it's the only thing they could see or experience. Whereas the spiritual world or the spiritual reality is not so perceivable or it's not so easily accessible as the material reality, therefore there's not so many options for one person.
No, but for the jiva in the beginning, he can see both. Tatasta means you see both. Even this material world is an arrangement that the living entities are able to be here and stay here. The function here is also an arrangement of the Tathasta Chakra, because the soul is spiritual, while the material world is material. So the two have nothing in common. So by the potency of the Tathasta Shakti, then the jivas, which are Tathasta, are able to be here. Like that. But one falls from a position and where one sees both. Like that. One has to see both. Otherwise, tatasta means you're in the middle, so you can see both. One is situated in the tatasta position. One has to be able to see both. So one does not start off in the material world. One has to start off in the spiritual world. Otherwise, how do you see both? Like that. So this is the point. They don't start here. Means tatasta means it's in between. So that's the Brahman platform. So the tatasta means that one is on the Brahma Buddha platform. From that platform, then one can see the spiritual and see the material. So somehow or another, then most of the souls choose the spiritual, and some don't. So because of that position, then they turn from Krishna, and that's the root of the karma. Because that's what starts the karma. Therefore karma is based on the soul's desire to be independent from God. They want to be the Lord and enjoy it. So that's the cause of karma. Like that. Though karma is something else, it's material activity. This is consciousness. So when there's the polluted consciousness, when the consciousness is polluted, then the soul wants to be separate and wants to do whatever they like. and because of that, then they suffer in this world. So if one can get rid of that consciousness, basically one gets rid of material existence. So that's why there's so much emphasis being put on change of consciousness, because if you change that, everything else changes. That's even why we take, see, there's the point of you don't have to change anything. But this point is an internal point. Right? When we say you don't have to change anything, your lifestyle, anything, just take up the chanting of Hare Krishna. Understand we're servant of God. Understand that, you know, we're not the Lord and enjoyer. But this is an internal point. This is not an external point. External point means to advance spiritually, you don't have to change anything externally. Right? And so therefore, because Prabhupada said that, it doesn't matter what lifestyle we follow. Right? So that will be used in this way. But if you don't have to change anything, you just have to take up the chanting and change your mentality of who you are, then we see that there is a very major change. The external is the minor. The major is the internal. When you change the internal, automatically the external will change. So to say that, oh, well, we've changed the internal, but the external doesn't change, then we may find that maybe we haven't changed the internal. Or we started to change. This is the beginning stages. But, this depends upon the individual situation. What is there? Does that make some sense? Like that. So we have to be careful that when they say, well, Prabhupada didn't ask for them to change, he did. If you change the inside, the outside will change. Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is it will come, it comes automatically. So then when you take the living entity and you change the consciousness, then automatically you change them from spiritual to material. So then the root of karma is actually from polluted consciousness. That's what makes the situation. That makes any sense?
Yes, Maharaj. How could we understand these cases that seem to be exceptional as example of the prostitute that was living in front of the priest, but her consciousness was elevated, although her activity remained to be degraded?
Well, I will say, in the, how do you say, how is that being followed? Just like there's one discussion amongst, I think it's amongst Sri Devi and Saraswati and Parvati. And they're discussing about who's the most chaste of women. And one of the stories that comes up, because there's eight chaste women that are mentioned, you know, exemplary, very exemplary women. So, that I know of, one of them, or in this conversation, then the girl who they were discussing, then was a prostitute. That she was the most chaste. So naturally you'll think, well, how is a prostitute the most chaste? So then they went through the stories that this girl, she was a prostitute, but then whoever would come in the evening, she would deal with them as her husband and be completely focused and dedicated to that person at that time. So then, I'm not sure how it worked out, if it was just an accidental thing or if it was something arranged by the devas or whatever. So then the person came, the person was a leper. And then she went to take her bath and everything. In the meantime, when she got ready and came out, the leper died. So because that was her husband, then, you know, she shaved her head, put on white, and then the person was taken, you know, to the burning ghats and that. I'm not sure what happened after that. But basically they gave the examples that the mentality is the main thing. The chastity is the mentality is the main thing. So because of this, we're also going Rajasthan. It's usually popular today. So then, because of this, then she was considered the most chaste. So now, therefore, you can see is that there's a mentality in which a girl is dealing with the husband. So, and that's based on religious principles. So then, if that's being followed, then it's the overall, the environment is, would be considered irreligious. But the person who's in that environment may be able to maintain a proper religious mentality. You know, because she could see is that, you know, somehow or another, by some fate or something, this has ended up as her occupation. She had no father or husband or son to take care. So this is the occupation she ended up in. You know. But the point from this to learn is not that one can be a prostitute and be fully Krishna conscious. The point is that the most important thing is the consciousness, that if you remember Krishna and you're humble, because this girl was very humble, she was feeling that the situation is very, you know, by fate somehow or another she's in this position, she's feeling very bad about it. So because of that, that humility and that dependency on the Lord, then thinking of the Lord as her shelter, when she left her body, she went back to Godhead. Right? That's the point. While the other person, because he was proud of his birth and position and religious principles, at the time of death, he didn't think of God. He was thinking, you know, of his position and then how this prostitute, you know, was not following nicely the Dharma. Like that. So it's a fine balance. See, is that the point is that the internal is the essential point. But to get to that then will require going through the external. Because if you don't externally live a proper lifestyle, there's a good chance that internally you will not either. So therefore you see there's this one example. Right? In trillions of years of history, you have one of this example. It's not like there's, like the kings, Bhagavatam, king after king after king, religious and pious and what he does and everything like that. Everything very, very nice and very, very proper. You know? One hears all that. So, that you're hearing. So then you can understand this is standard. This is the behavior of kings, this is the behavior of leaders. Like that. Right? And then to prove one point, then you have this one example. There's not hundreds of these examples. If there are, then one may doubt that this is not a valid occupation for a good girl. But no, there's one given just to point out, make the point. Like that. But those exceptions to make a specific point can't be taken as the rule as a lifestyle. You know, if someone complains, why you're not behaving, you're so loose, you're this, you're that. No, but this prostitute, she was considered the most chaste girl in the universe, and she also, this other prostitute, she went back to Godhead. What's the problem? That's missing the whole point of what the scripture is saying. Because then one's taking an internal point and making it external. Then it's, yes, by living the lifestyle of a prostitute, I'll go back to Godhead. No, that's not what it's saying. Right? So the same way as when Prabhupada says you don't have to change the externals, you just change the internal, change the consciousness. Automatically the external is going to match that. It's going to follow that. That flavor will be followed. So one has to be careful not to use that to maintain one's material attachments. This is a very, it's not an uncommon idea. He said, Prabhupada said, you don't have to change anything. Therefore, I can do all the nonsense that I'm attached to, with full confidence that this is good. No, that Prabhupada didn't say it. He said, you don't need to change what you're doing, you change the consciousness. You change the consciousness, automatically with time you'll think, well, maybe I should adjust this, adjust that. Because it's very difficult that your internal mood's one thing and external mood's another thing. Right? The ideal is both are the same. Therefore, we see some people are chosen as acharyas and exemplary, and some are not. Like for our lifestyle, how we live, we don't take Sukadeva Goswami. Right? Though it matched as a Paramahamsa, but for a sadhaka, it doesn't match. He wasn't taking the position of a sadhaka. He was taking the position of Uttam. So it matched, but for us it won't. Or the Goswamis. The Goswamis, they were exemplary, but what we take is their teaching. We don't take that, okay, they wore some little dinky piece of cloth and sat down next to Radhakund, and so if I do that, then I'm a Goswami. But that's the materialistic idea. Is that I just take the external and I get, or I reject the external and I get. But both are niyamagraha. One's accepting, one's rejecting. Both are missing the point. The point is that I said that we must see what is the change in the consciousness. That's what we're trying to affect. So that's the... Does that make some sense? Anything else on it? So Sweta Suktara Upanishad. Although the two birds are on the same tree, the eating bird is fully engrossed with anxiety and moroseness as the enjoyer of the fruits of the tree. But if in some way or other he turns his face to his friend, who is the Lord, and knows his glories, at once the suffering bird becomes free of all anxiety. So he's making the point of some way or another, if that happens, then it's something special. Srimad Bhagavatam, 10:51-53 and 325-22, it is said, O my Lord, O infallible Supreme Person, when a person wandering throughout the universes becomes eligible for liberation from material existence, he gets an opportunity to associate with devotees. When he associates with the devotees, his attraction for you is awakened. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the highest goal of the Supreme Devotees, and the Lord of the universe. Okay, so here he's saying if someone is eligible for liberation, then he'll come in contact with the devotees, and then by that, then we get attracted to the Lord. Because liberation isn't actually liberation. Real liberation is taking up devotional service, because that will actually get us out of this material world. The rest of it won't. The rest of it can't get us out. It means you get out temporarily, but then within a short time you'll be back. Because the soul has to be active, and as soon as they want to be active, what activity does the soul know if he's only got to the Brahman from the material world? He only knows the material world. Therefore, he'll come back in the material world. So here, then, the opportunity is given. Since liberation is there for them, then they come in contact with the devotee, just like we see who's speaking here, Vaishnava Das. He was, high-grade Brahman, sannyasi, studying the Vedanta, very fixed in the Advaita philosophy. And so then someone like that would be, as close as you can get for starting to get eligible. So then he then saw a devotee, a Vaishnava from Vrindavan, come by there chanting and everything. They were probably walking from Mayapur to Vrindavan or the other way. So then he saw that and saw their love for Krishna, and they're, just the ecstatic symptoms and all this. So he'd never seen that before. To him, spiritual meant dry. So when he saw this, he became attracted. So by his association, he became attracted. It was awoken, his attraction to the Lord. Then he inquired, who is this? What is this? People said, all those kind of people live in Navadvipa. So then he went to Navadvipa to find such people. And then he found Babaji Maharaj, Paramahamsa Babaji Maharaj, and then by his association, then he became a devotee. So that's the process working here. But it's not because of, this is just by the Lord's mercy. Like that, because one seriously wants, but this is for the person who wants to know. He thinks I am God and all this, then there's no need. You've already got it worked out. But if it's like you're doing all these things, but you kind of think, oh, maybe there's something beyond, what is actually the real thing? Then Krishna will give one this opportunity. Like that. Then the next quote. The spiritually powerful message of Godhead can be properly discussed only in the society of devotees, and it is greatly pleasing to hear in that association. One hears from the devotees, the way of transcendental experience quickly opens, and gradually one attains firm faith that in due course develops into attraction and devotion. So only in the society of devotees can it really be discussed, because the message of Godhead then has a spirit in which it is to be heard and chanted. So that is that the Supreme Lord is the Supreme Lord. That's the basic, the bottom line. Then the next step is to understand that the Supreme Lord has relationships with the living entities. So those relationships then are something special. And so hearing about all these things, the exchange between the Lord and the devotees, that only in the society of devotees can be discussed. Others will doubt it. They'll doubt that there's not something to gain in the material world, that karma, dharma is better. This is how this whole thing's coming up. This discussion, there's something, some other religious aspects, some temporary religious aspects are important, and not the eternal religious aspect. So only in the society of devotees can it really be discussed. And then in that association it's very pleasing. Then it says if one hears, then quickly the transcendental experience opens. Means very quickly one is able to apply it in one's life and develop. And then it says gradually attains firm faith, and that faith develops into attraction and devotion. So that means that very quickly it brings one to the platform of bhava and then to prema. Like that. Chudamani. In your opinion, is there no difference between a Hindu and a Yavana? Vaishnadas. There are two kinds of difference. There are two kinds of difference. One spiritual and two material. Spiritually, Hindus and Yavanas are not different. However, materially, there is a difference. Chudamani. Why do you speak with the pompous words of the Vedanta? What is the material difference between the Hindus and the Yavanas? So it seems that these persons are not, because he always makes cracks about Vedanta. So it must be that being into the realm of Karma Mimamsa and all this, they consider Vedanta to be, you know, not an important aspect. Otherwise, if he was an impersonalist, then he would honor the Vedantic discussions. But he's just discussing material piety. And he wants to establish the fact that there's a difference between the Hindus and the Yavanas. Vaishnavdas. I speak of material social customs. According to the material idea, a Yavana is untouchable. Thus, in the materialist idea, one should neither touch nor associate with a Yavana. Thus, a Hindu touched by a Yavana must at once bathe with water. Also, a Hindu should not accept food or other things from a Yavana, because it is attained by committing sinful deeds. A Yavana's body is horrible and should be avoided. Therefore, it is untouchable. Means because they've done something sinful, then they're born in a Yavana family. So therefore, the situation being very bad, therefore they're avoided because of previous sins. This is seeing it on the bigger thing. Most people just see the bodies. We're this Hindus, they're Yavanas, so therefore we don't associate. But what's the problem? It's because based on sinful activities, therefore that situation is attained. But he'll take it then farther than this. Chudamani. If this is so, then how can the Hindus and Yavanas be the same spiritually? Please clearly explain. Vaishnavdas. The scriptures declare, O best of the Bhrigus, the holy name of Lord Krishna delivers the chanter. These words mean that the Yavanas and everyone else can attain the supreme spiritual goal of life by chanting the holy name of Lord Krishna. In this way, the Hindus and Yavanas may become equals. A human being who does not perform eternal pious deeds, like chanting Lord Krishna's name, is declared by the scriptures to be a Dvipada Pashu, an animal pretending to be a human being. This is because such a person has no faith in the holy name of Lord Krishna. Although such a person may have taken birth as a human being, he is not really human. In truth, he is an animal. Mahabharata explains, O King, a person whose past pious deeds are small cannot have faith in Lord Govinda, the remnants of food offered to him, his holy name, or his devotees. Oh, that's the Mahaprasadi Govinda. Eternal pious deeds which purify the soul are called great pious deeds. Temporary pious deeds which are performed without spiritual faith are called small pious deeds. The remnants of food offered to Lord Krishna, Lord Krishna, Lord Krishna's holy name, and the pure Vaishnavas. These four are spiritual. They reveal the spiritual truth. Trudamani, with a smile. What kind of talk is this? This is just the Vaishnavas' fanatic dogma. How can rice, dal, and curry be spiritual? There is nothing that you will not claim. Vaishnavdas. Do what you like, but please do not criticize the Vaishnavas. That is my request. In a debate, only the various arguments should be considered. Why do you need to verbally attack the Vaishnavas? The remnants of food offered to the Lord are beyond the touch of the material world. One should not eat foods that are not thus offered to the Lord. For eating the remnants of food offered to the Lord illuminates the way to the spiritual world and drives away all that is foolish and material. Therefore, Sri Ishopanishad, Mantra 1, explains, everything animate or inanimate that is within the universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. One should therefore accept only those things necessary for himself, which is set aside as his quota. One should not accept other things, knowing well to whom they belong. Whatever exists in the material universe has a relationship with the potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A person who sees that everything has a relationship with the Lord's potency will not attempt to enjoy the things of this material world. A spiritually conscious soul accepts only what he must to attain his material body, maintain his body in this material world. And if he understands that everything is the Supreme Personality of Godhead's mercy, then he will not fall down. That is the way a person eager to attain the spiritual world will act. Therefore, the remnants of food offered to Lord Krishna are called Mahaprasad, great mercy. Still, you are not attracted to these spiritual things. That is your misfortune. Trudamani, let's change the subject. Let's consider ordinary material things. How should one behave with yavanas? It means they have to get it down to purely mundane. Vaishnavdas. As long as a person is a yavana, we should ignore him. However, if by performing eternal pious deeds, the yavana becomes a Vaishnava, then I will not use the word yavana to refer to him. The scriptures declare, Padma Purana and Itihasa, Samuchaya. He goes to hell who thinks in terms of his birth and caste, and who thus sees a Vaishnava as a Shudra, a barbarian, or an outcast. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, a scholar learned in the four Vedas is not truly dear to me. An outcast who has become my devotee is truly dear to me. To him gifts should be given. From him blessings should be accepted. He should be worshipped as much as I. Chudamani, I understand. If this is so, then why cannot a Vaishnava householder marry his daughter to a Yavana Vaishnava? Or why cannot he himself marry the daughter of a Yavana Vaishnava? Vaishnavdas. In ordinary material understanding, when a person is born in a Yavana family, he remains a Yavana until his death. However, in the spiritual understanding, when he engages in devotional service, he is a Yavana no longer. 10 kinds of ordinary social rites are described in the Smriti Shastra. Marriage is one of them. If a householder Vaishnava is a Hindu, then he has a status within the four castes, and it is proper that he should marry within his own caste. For in ordinary material dealings, it is best to accept the temporary duties assigned to the four castes. One does not become a Vaishnava merely by rejecting the duties of the four castes. A true Vaishnava, does whatever is favorable for devotional service. The person becomes spiritually advanced and thus qualified to ignore or renounce the duties of the four castes, then he may do so. Then he may renounce all duties of the four castes. If the duties of the four castes are not favorable for one's devotional service, then they may be easily rejected. If association with the Yavanas is not favorable for devotional service, then a faithful Yavana Vaishnava should reject their association. What is the difference between a Hindu Vaishnava who properly rejects the duties of the four castes and a Yavana Vaishnava who rejects the association with Yavanas? Both have rejected what is material and inferior. Spiritually, they are brothers. However, this may not be true for a householder Vaishnava. Even though his associates and duties may not always be favorable for his advancement in devotional service, he should not renounce them prematurely. He may renounce them only when he is properly qualified. However, when his attachment to devotional service becomes very strong, he will naturally renounce unfavorable association and duties. In Srimad Bhagavatam 11.11.32, the Supreme Personality of Godhead explains, understanding these virtues and faults I have described, a sincere devotee renounces all ordinary material duties and worships me alone. Such a devotee is the best of all. In the concluding statements of Bhagavad Gita 18.66, the Supreme Personality of Godhead declares, abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. Srimad Bhagavatam 4.29.54, it is said, when a person is fully engaged in devotional service, he is favored by the Lord, who bestows his causeless mercy. At such a time, the awakened devotee gives up all material activities and ritualistic performances mentioned in the Vedas. So here it means when he's fully engaged, when we get to the point where we're not dependent upon one of the material situations like that, then such a person, he can go beyond all these, the material activities and ritualistic performances. So basically, traditionally we see that this can be accepted at the platform of Brahma Bhuta, when one actually comes to the liberated platform. Because then one can be fully engaged in all these activities. There's no need of any other activities. But before that, and then before that, then there may be some connection with these things. So before that, then generally one works within the varnashram system. Though he may pick a situation which is more favorable for his performance of devotional service, as a brahmacharya or vanaprastha or sannyas. But a grihastha then, to perform his duties, may have to associate with various persons or be in certain situations that aren't the most ideal for his devotional service. But as long as they're not completely against, then whatever, these things go on. And until such time as one is able to pull himself out of the need for the facilities or the situations within the grihastha ashram, that one may feel that there is an important need for. So as long as those attachments are there, they need to be engaged in Krishna's service. So then they have to be performed. But as soon when the needs are gone, there's no necessity to perform the activities that fulfill that need. Right? Need is something that is required, it's a goal. So then if one doesn't have that goal, then there's not likely one has the goal, he wants to be married. So then you have to go through the process of marriage to get that goal. Right? So if there's no desire for the activities and association of marriage, therefore there's no need of marriage and that association. Does that make sense? But one may situate oneself then in other situations, and then when one doesn't require those anymore, then he can move into this platform of complete detachment. Chudamani, if a Yavana becomes a sincere Vaishnava, can you take food, drink, and other things with him? Vaishnav Das. Sannyasi Vaishnavas may take Mahaprasad with them. Householder Vaishnavas who are materialistic may not be so inclined. However, there is no rule forbidding one from even taking the remnants of food left by any other Vaishnavas. Indeed, one should take their remnants. Okay. It means the sannyasi Vaishnava may sit down and take Mahaprasad with them. They'll eat together, no problem. The householder may or may not, depending upon, it says materialistic. We're materialistic. So they're seeing in terms of all the externals like that. And they have maybe a reputation or other things that they are very worried about. And if people talk that this is going on, then there'll be a problem. Like that. Chudamani, why is it then that in Vaishnava temples, Yavana Vaishnavas are not allowed to touch the deities? Vaishnav Das, it is an offense to call a Vaishnava born in the Yavana family a Yavana Vaishnava. Simply by being a Vaishnava, he is qualified to serve Lord Krishna. If a householder Vaishnava engaged in serving the deity of the Lord is, in the opinion of materialistic persons, outside the caste rules of Varnashram Dharma, the Vaishnava is at fault only from the point of view of persons eager to follow material customs. Still, a sannyasi Vaishnava should not worship the deity. For if he worships the deity, then his status as a person beyond the caste system becomes ruined. Instead, in his heart, he should worship Lord Krishna, the beloved of Sri Radha. Chudamani, I understand. Now please tell me what you think about the Brahmanas. Vaishnav Das. Brahmanas are of two kinds. One, Brahmanas by nature, and two, Brahmanas only by birth. They who are Brahmanas by nature are mostly Vaishnavas. Serious thinkers from every philosophical camp will honor such a Brahmana. They who are Brahmanas by birth are honored because of only ordinary social customs. That the Vaishnava should be honored as the genuine Brahmas is confirmed in the following words of scripture, Srimad Bhagavatam 7.9.10. The Brahman has all 12 of the Brahminical qualifications, as they are stated in the book called Sanat Sujata, but is not a devotee and is averse to the lotus feet of the Lord. He is certainly lower than a devotee who is a dog eater, but who has dedicated everything, mind, words, activities, wealth, and life to the Supreme Lord. Such a devotee is better than such a brahmana, because the devotee can purify his whole family, whereas the so-called brahmana in a position of false prestige cannot purify even himself. So here is that you have the brahminical qualifications. So these qualifications of, you know, simplicity, purity, truthfulness, these are, generally we'll see, most of them are subtle, the subtle body, like this. So it's not even the gross body. The gross body will naturally follow. So, but here we see is that it's the, if they're not surrendered to the Lord, which means the consciousness, the actual spiritual platform. So that's the important thing. Because otherwise one, it means the subtle will influence the gross. But more subtle than the subtle is the spiritual. So that will then influence the others. So even though someone is very, very qualified, still he's not as good as someone who is a devotee, even though he may be from the family of dog eaters. So then this would mean that, so some will take it, okay, that puts the Brahmins as low. No, it puts the Vaishnavas as high. Because of all living entities, then the human life is the best. Of humans, the Brahman is the best. But of Brahmins, the Vaishnava is the best. So it puts them up. We have to be very careful in this also, as we don't use this to say others who are Brahmins, they're just low class. No, they're Brahmins. They have to be respected. But better is, it says he's not as good as this. It doesn't say that This Brahman is then lower than all other members of the Varnashram system. No, in the Varnashram he's still the topmost. But higher than the Varnashram system is the Vaishnava. So that is the position. But the real Brahman, as he's described before, means devotee. Those who are Brahman by birth, then that's not really a Brahman, but they are Brahmins. Means if they have all these qualifications. But if they're not devotees, especially if they're averse, then this is not considered very good. It's not a very high quality Brahman. Like that. Brahman, but completely materialistic. But the real Brahman, because the point is all these qualities are to come to the platform of serving the Lord. And so if they bring you to that platform, then we can say that it is good. Chudamani. The Shudras are not allowed to study the Vedas. If a Shudra becomes a Vaishnava, would he not then be allowed to study the Vedas? Vaishnavdas. Regardless of the caste in which he is born, a pure Vaishnava becomes a Brahmin according to spiritual calculations. The Vedas are divided into two parts. One, the Veda describing ordinary rituals and duties, and two, the Veda describing the spiritual truth. They are Brahmanas because of social customs, are allowed to study the Veda describing ordinary rules, rituals, and duties. And they who are Brahmanas according to spiritual calculations are allowed to study the Veda that describes the spiritual truth. Regardless of the caste in which he was born, a pure Vaishnava is perfectly qualified to study and teach the Vedas that describe the spiritual truth. This is described in the following words of Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, 4.4.21. A wise Brahmin should study the part of the Veda that describes the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is also said, Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 3.8.10. He is a miserly man who does not solve the problems of life as a human, and who thus quits this world like the cats and dogs without understanding the science of self-realization. He is a Brahmin who does not solve the problems of life as a human, and who quits this world knowing the truth of the eternal Supreme Personality Godhead. They are Brahmanas because of social customs are described in these words of Manusamhita 2.168. Brahman who does not study the Vedic literatures and who instead laboriously studies many other books about material things becomes at once in this life and along with his entire family a Shudra. The qualification of a person entitled to study the Veda that describes the spiritual path is stated in these words. Svetasvatara Upanishad 6.23. Only unto those great souls who have implicit faith in both the Lord and the spiritual master are all the imports of Vedic knowledge automatically revealed. So we see here is just because one has studied doesn't mean one will know. Because sometimes we see also that some will say that, well, we've tried this Krishna consciousness, or we've tried following, you know, various directions that Srila Prabhupada gave, or Varnashram, but they don't work. Right? It's a different age, times have changed, it's not the 60s anymore. Right? In the 60s, you know, it was more favorable, like that, and now it's not. Right? Because in those days, you had the hippies, and they were interested in spiritual life. Though everybody else in the society thought it was crazy. And now in the turn of the century, then all this New Age things and all that and spiritual things are even in the general populace are easily accepted as valuable. You don't have to be a hippie. You can even be a common person. It's considered, you know, esoteric things are nice. So therefore we can understand by this comparison that in the 60s when Prabhupada came, it was the proper time for these things. And now in the modern time, it's not. You understand the point? Means it's more favorable now than ever. Means you can talk about reincarnation, this, that, with practically anybody. And it's an accepted thing. But in the 60s, it was not. In the counterculture, yes. Outside that, no. Like that. So by Prabhupada's grace, it's becoming more and more favorable. So these discussions basically mean there's no implicit faith. So because of that, then the imports of this knowledge are not revealed. How to apply them, how to use them, how to gain from them, how to understand, it's just not being revealed. So it's not a matter of, oh, we tried that. Then we have to say that we were so expert that we tried so perfectly, but it didn't work, so therefore, then somebody has to be wrong. And it definitely it's not us. So that leaves us a few choices. Prabhupada was wrong, or the scriptures are wrong. Like that. So therefore we see it's not actually a well thought out or well performed activity. Yes.
If the person decides or concludes that Prabhupada was wrong, then his thinking is not logical, because it proved to be right for him, at least one for him was right, at least for that, and other people had been right, so
No, that's the point. The main point is that there must be faith. If faith is not there, then the whole process stops working. It means you have faith, shraddha. And then there's faith plus association of devotees. That makes sadhu sangha. When you have faith in sadhu sangha, then you add the rules and regulations, then it's called bhajana kriya. When you have faith, rules, bhajana kriya, I mean the faith, the association, and then the rules of devotional service, then you can come to the next platform, Sannatha Nivritti. When you have the four of those, and you become steady in it, then it comes to the fifth, Nishta. When all those five are there, and that, and there's an endeavor, desire to be absorbed in the holy name, then you get Ruchi, taste. And when those six are there, then you get the seventh, the attachment. And that's the eighth, bhava. So all those eight together, then you can come to the next platform. It's not that it's faith, okay, now we're done with faith, and now we go on. So if you remove faith from the equation, then you don't have the others. If you're on nishta, and then you lose faith, then you've gained to nishta, but you may not be acting on the platform of nishta anymore. One will be distracted from that.
How someone at the platform of Nishtha Maharaj could lose faith?
Is there offenses, material, the weeds, main thing is the weeds. If one has committed offense against the Vaishnavas, naturally then everything, then you lose even that advancement that's there. But if it's not that, then it may be a matter of just one wasn't careful to distinguish between the weeds. Right? That's why buddhi yoga, using the intelligence to see what is weed, what is real. You know, like somebody with this very strong desire to, you know, in his middle age, switch from, you know, strong devotional activities into strong, you know, household and just ordinary, you know, just an ordinary, just like everybody else, lifestyle. Then it may be a weed that will create some problem. You know, and if they're not careful, then that will grow, and then that will take over one's position, so then the faith may be reduced. You know, one will put one's faith in other things, what brings about their money, or other things that create a situation like that. Pretty. So like that, then it's... Does that make sense? So it can be lost, that if one's not careful, then the weeds will grow. Or if one's not careful, then offenses to the Vaishnavas may come up. So one has to be very, very careful about all these things. Yes?
In relation to the earlier argument about caste and Vaishnava, now I understood that if one is a sincere and honest Vaishnava, then one is sort of, one cannot be an outcast, as it were.
Yes.
Why is it that we are not allowed into Jagannath Puri temple?
That's because he said that the people, the Brahmins there, are seeing according to caste. They're seeing more from that position. So naturally in their eyes, then it will be, that's how they'll see it. And, you know, we don't need to make any trouble like that. So therefore, we don't bother. see Sanatan Goswami also didn't go in. Haridas Thakur, one of the great, the top Rupa Goswami, they didn't go into the temple. You know, because social customs will be there. Now, this is Hindu social custom. It means this is Vedic social custom. But, you know, in an improper life way. Also, even if we're in a Western situation, then basic rules and all that are also all followed. You know, everyone drives on the proper side of the road and does all things the way that should be done. You know, you pay your rent on time and you do all these just ordinary things. Just as how the local situation is expecting. Like that. Because it's not compromising devotional service. It's not that if you drive on the proper side of the road and stop at the stoplights and, you know, do all that, that it's going, you won't be able to, your chanting of Hare Krishna will become less. No, these are just ordinary things, it doesn't matter. You know, so they should be followed. Like that. So basically it's you know, they're pujaris are devotees, but they're not able to see beyond the externals like that. They're not appreciating beyond that. That's the problem. Okay. So then continuing here then. The word para bhakti here means pure devotional service. I cannot say more on this subject. Please understand it as far as you are able. The summary conclusion of all this is, a person who has faith in pure devotional service is qualified to study the part of the Veda describing spiritual truth. And a person who has attained pure devotional service is qualified to teach the part of the Veda describing spiritual truth. Chudamani. Is your conclusion then that the part of the Veda describing spiritual truth teaches only the Vaishnava religion and does not teach any other religion? Vaishnava Das. There is only one religion. There is no such thing as two religions. That one religion is called the eternal religion, or the Vaishnava religion. Other religions are temporary. They serve as steps leading up to the Vaishnava religions. In the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam 11.14.3, the Supreme Personality of Godhead explains, by the influence of time, the transcendental soul of Vedic knowledge was lost at the time of annihilation. Therefore, when the subsequent creation took place, I spoke the Vedic knowledge to Brahma because I myself am the religious principles enunciated in the Vedas. The Katha Upanishad 1.2.15 and 1.3.9 explains, all the Vedas describe the abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now I will briefly describe that abode to you. The realm of Lord Vishnu is the supreme spiritual abode. When the discussion had reached this point, the faces of Devi Vidyaratna and his associates had become pale and withered. The great Pandit teachers were completely demoralized. It was now 5 o'clock. Everyone said, let us end the meeting now. Everyone agreed and the meeting ended. With one voice, the Brahmana Pandits praised the learning of Vaishnava Das. Chanting the holy names of Lord Hari as they went, the Vaishnavas returned to their homes. Okay. So any questions on that? Otherwise we go into the next chapter.
Someone raised their hand.
Yeah?
Yes. I was just wondering, in a few occasions I came with the devotees who were taking a lot to this new age things, and in that maybe they are not qualified or they don't feel that it's only enough, you know, to train Hare Krishna or to completely taking devotional service. So is it actually helping to individual persons to take something from out, or it's...
I mentioned before, as someone who just doesn't study our books but studies the other books, then they drop from the rabbinical platform down to the platform of Shudra.
They're putting their faith in...
Yeah, it means... Prabhupada mentions that to take up all this New Age stuff, if one wasn't a devotee, then it's a step forward. Because then from being completely grossly absorbed in the externals of material life, in eating, sleeping, mating, defending, then they're taking up some aspect of, there's some subtleties there, or, you know, the mind and the emotions and, you know, the kind of like the inference of something spiritual. So then that's a step forward, that's progressive. But for a devotee, it's not progressive at all. What will be gained? Like that. It means they're taking to something to fulfill their life, but all those things are already described within Krishna consciousness. It means what will they get? What is there in the age, basically? You get some astrology, astronomy. That's already there in the Vedic.
Yeah. And like, okay, I chant Hare Krishna, but I don't feel nothing. But like this, through this, I can know my, I can start to feel a third body. I don't know.
Yeah. So I mean, if your goal is to feel a third body, then that's great. I mean, it means all you have to do is, you know, find, you know, a boy or a girl, and you can feel a second body. You don't even have to bother. You probably get more out of that than trying to feel this third body. You know. Like that, you know. So it's just they're looking for what is it? What are they trying to find? Do they want answers, or they just want to feel some third body, or to travel around, or do something? You know, Reiki, okay, feels a little warm, right? You can drink some tea; it also feels warm. You know what I'm saying? Is that just that's the thing? Yes, you know, it's cheap. Like that. It's there. Why is it working? If it works, it's because it's Krishna created. Krishna created these things. Those energies are there as Krishna's. Third body, what's this third body? They don't even know what the second body is. Can they distinguish? New Age can't distinguish between the mind and the intelligence. Right? Even the modern scientists, psychologists, don't distinguish between the two. And can't tell what is what. So they haven't even figured out the second body, or even the first body. You know, so how is it they're figuring out a third body? What is this third body?
Their argument is like with opening the chakras and different, you can hear better Mahamantra.
Yeah, so then why, how are you sure that these things are opening the chakras? Isn't it, maybe it's just some concentration. How do they know they're opening the chakras? And anyway, you want to open the chakras, and the yoga system is the correct way to do it. Because what is your goal of opening the chakras? Which mode of nature you want to enhance? Because everything has something at all these different levels. Passion, ignorance, goodness. It's all there in all these things. You know, the chakras will have many different levels. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So, then how are they going to know? How much does that Reiki know something about chakras? Do they really know something about chakras? Yeah. These other things, what is there? Where do they get the idea from chakras from? Where would that come from? There's no chakra business in the Western society. Right? There's nothing in the Middle East. Far East talks about it to some degree. But mainly they just get into the flow of energy. So they're just into the prana. Right? So that means it has to come from the yoga system. So then that yoga system, who is given that system? That's Krishna. And what's the purpose of it? So yes, it focuses the mind, it does so many things. But why does that have to take prominence where it brings one away from Krishna consciousness? Right? You eat to maintain the body. You know, you keep a roof over your head, but does that mean that you get totally into your house or you get totally into your food? So if they want to do some yoga sans or some pranayama or something like that, why not if it's good for their health? But it doesn't become a separate philosophy. It doesn't get emphasized. It's not because it's there for that. No, because you took the determination to do this, therefore, then the mind becomes a little focused. And because now your mind is more focused than it was before, therefore, then you find when you apply it to hearing and chanting. you could take the same determination. Instead of sitting down for, you know, 20 minutes and trying to meditate, you could for 20 minutes really try to hear the Maha Mantra. You know? And the effect would be more. But it's that one doesn't have, because it's on the transcendental plane. Well, this is on a mundane plane. It'll be the best in goodness. Or you're doing it for health, so passion. You know, make the body fit. Then, you know, so many things. One becomes more attractive to others. A mode of ignorance. What is the goal? Because an activity of goodness can still be performed in passion or ignorance. You understand? Because it's your goal. It means you can use something to get... It means, depending upon your goal, then it actually, then you call it that thing. Right? I take the same ingredients. I take milk and sugar and this. And depending on what I want to get from it, I will call it that at the end. Right? I'll call it kheer, or I'll call it burfi, or I'll call it rabri, or I'll call it so many things. Same ingredients. It depends on how I use it and what I'm trying to get out of it, then I'll call it differently. So you can take yoga, which is something that is supposed to establish the mode of goodness, but because your goal is passion or ignorance, then that's the result you'll get. So even operating these, they're being operated without knowledge. So it's just some cheap thing that you feel you're doing something spiritual, something subtle. And you're getting something out of it, you know. You get something that you can perceive with your senses. And so then you feel good about it. You know? So it can be done, but why make it prominent? You know what I'm saying? Why would that come in the place of Krishna consciousness? Or why does it take such an important role? You know, if you don't pass stool, you know, if you don't pass urine, within a couple of days you'll die. Right? So do we make a philosophy out of that passing urine is the most essential thing, you'll die? You know? Or we don't pass stool also. Or we don't breathe. You know, that in 5 minutes. Right? So do we make breathing the most essential thing in our life? Because without that, then how will chant Hare Krishna? Or food, okay. You know, some days, some weeks, and then we'll die. So does that mean food becomes the most prominent? So it's just part of your life. It just has its place, and it only takes up that much space, that's all. So that's the whole idea the whole Vedic system is that you have these needs, so therefore do it. But do it in such a way that it will be still helpful for your Krishna consciousness. By engaging it in Krishna service, then it becomes something that brings you nearer Krishna. It itself may not be devotion. That you're trying to do it for Krishna, that's devotional, but the activity itself may not be so. It will help bring about that devotion. But if you just speculate and make up one's own position, then what benefit we will actually get? Does that make some sense? Yeah.
What actually is New Age?
New Age? New Age is a cocktail of anything that's subtle and different. It doesn't matter where it's come from and that. You know, it just should be something that's a little bit subtle and a little bit esoteric. You know, something you can kind of have a philosophy about, something that's, you know, how you say, more perceived with the mind. Though it can be connected with the senses. Basically, what New Age is impersonalism in a new form. The old impersonalism, then you had to have good qualities to perform. You had to be renounced. Impersonalism, Grihasthas did not attain to the impersonal platform. They had to give it up. So they may have been a Grihastha with the idea of getting rid of their attachment to the sensual pleasures. so that they could then be successful as a sannyasi, to renounce the world and then in this way merge into the Brahman. Like that. But the New Age is impersonalism, but it is completely centered around the senses. The bottom line of New Age is the senses. Is that whatever path you take, it all leads to the same goal, which is sense gratification. Basically. You know? And we're, you know, like this. There's so many different angles, but the general thing is it's just a conglomerate of anything that's a little esoteric, you know? Little Chinese this, little Indian that, little, you know, anything, you know, like that can be thrown in there. Yeah, like that. But especially something subtle. You know, ghost things, you know, like that. You know, fit in there very nicely. And, you know, anything to do with pranas, astrology, like this. Then, you know, throw in there because New Agers have to eat, so generally it'll be something, you know, good for you, good for the health, so, you know, be organic or, you know, some kind of, there has to be something a little subtle about it. You know, it could be connected to, you know, the natures of the body or anything like that. Anything that's just a little bit subtle, then it's nice. So that's an advantage to it over the gross materialists is that it's subtle. So it sets them up to understand that there are subtle things at work. So then such people, generally you'll find those who are into New Age, then when they come in contact with Krishna consciousness, if it's presented properly, so both it's scientific and they get a taste by the, you know, the good association in that, they readily take up some, you know, either, you know, some practices or seriously Krishna consciousness. So for them it's a step forward. But for devotees who already have a tradition of the subtle aspects, for them to go into this, then it's a step back. Because basically you'll see the bottom line is sense gratification. Is the main thing is they want independence and they want sense gratification. That's generally the motive behind it. Like that. It's my experience, wherever I've seen it. You know? The main thing is because you restrict yourself, therefore you're not happy. And you're not happy because you're not enjoying yourself, because you're restricting yourself. So if you don't restrict yourself, then you'll be happy. And basically any New Age kind of person who will give you direction and advice, this is always the bottom line. Oh, you're following these four little principles, that's why you're nuts. You know? That's why you're having difficulty. Oh, you're working under your authorities and this, and you feel, that's why you give that up. Oh, you're having to, you know, follow the husband or take care of this. Oh, give that up. You know, do what you want to do. Be yourself. Be true to yourself. It just means be true to your lower nature, that's all. It's just, whatever is in your lower nature, whatever your desires, do that. But then the problem comes is that then, okay, so even we say everybody should, you know, be satisfied in their nature, higher, lower, whatever. But then the problem is we, because of the scarcity mentality, therefore we're all trying to enjoy the same thing. Right? So how do we work out that? You know, I want to be free and do what I want, and you want to be free and do what you want. So how do we work that out? So therefore there must be some etiquette there. So the New Age doesn't really, except you just be nice and you be a little this and that and a little sensitive and that's all. But there's no real definition and no working thing. So then the difficulty comes is then how do you define how person A will relate to person B? Because when you take the two people doing the same thing in the same place for their own purposes, then they're naturally going to cause a disturbance. You know, one person wants to sing at the top of his lungs and someone else wants to do some, then it's going to be a disturbance. You know, so then how do you work that out? So this the New Age doesn't really describe, but the Vedic literature does. Therefore, then one has to pull back and find that what is a proper solution to this. that you, okay, you want this situation. You want to spend time with the opposite sex. So therefore, so you won't disturb others, then here's some, these are the rules that make it so you can do that, fulfill your desires, but not disturb everybody else's. Therefore, you pick a boy or girl that is not already married. Right? Like that. Because if you pick one that already is, then you're going to disturb the person that they're married to. Right? Like that. And because the person may be connected with others, there's family, and all those members of the family then consider them as part of their family and part of their needs, their emotional needs and interaction. Therefore, then they should be also happy with this arrangement. You know, so all these different things are there. So one can call them restrictions, but why is restriction a bad word? You know, this is where they give a dog a bad name and hang him. Well, since when is restriction a bad word? Right? If you're supposed to be kind and considerate to the other people, that's a restriction. Why do I have to be kind and considerate? I don't like the guy, just tell him. Why even just tell him? Why I bother? I just, you know, take out my gun and shoot him. Makes it a lot easier. Because if I tell him, maybe tomorrow he'll be in my face again. I shoot him, then the problem's solved. You know, so it means, therefore, that's the weakness in the system. It's because it's set, you do what you want, but you still, you're going to bother someone else. So you have to restrict. So restriction is never bad. Restriction actually creates good, if you understand how to use restriction. The more you restrict something, the better the result you get. Right? A kid wants to learn piano. So he's restricted for 1 minute a day. And then he goes there and plays on the piano. So definitely, you know, you add up 50 years of 1 minute a day, and he'll probably learn something. But if you restrict the kid for 2 hours a day, then within a few years, then they'll be quite good at playing piano. Right? So that restriction creates something. If one's conjugal, emotions are just free for everybody, then getting some of that doesn't really have any meaning. What's the value of it? Right? The conjugal relationship is supposed to be something very valuable. Most valuable of relationships in this world. Right? So now, if it's free for everybody, then what's the great thing of getting something from somebody? Right? You get 5 minutes of attention and then they're off with someone else. What's the speciality? Right? But if you restrict so that two people are only connected to each other for their life, then the depth of that relationship, it goes very deep. Then something is tasted. The other thing, there's nothing tasted. Some little tantalization of the senses. But no emotions. Right? That you want something, okay, the senses want something, we call that emotion. That's called lust. That's not what we call a noble emotion. So therefore, it doesn't create. Restriction is important, but that's the one thing the New Age always speaks against, is restriction. It doesn't speak about all restriction. What, as you know, it's just, why is it that it's that? Following the four related principles is the problem. Why it's not the problem that you're driving down the same side of the road as everybody else? You're just like a little piece, a cog in a machine, and therefore you've lost your identity. So you should break out of that. Drive down the sidewalk, you know, do like Schwarzenegger, drive in the front of the store, you know, to pick up whatever you want. You know, I mean, it's just, you know, why restrict yourself? You know, it means, you know, you're tired of your boss always on your case. Just march into his office and tell him what you think about him. Yeah? Will one's life be prosperous? No, one will lose one's job, one's going to end up with a great fine or maybe even in jail. So one is going to be restricted. You have the freedom to not have this job. Right? You've freed yourself, yes, and you have the freedom to be poor. So the thing is whatever you want in this world, you have to pay, and that payment is some sort of restriction. You want money, then you have to be there every day at 9, and then at 5 o'clock you get out. And you got to go there 5 days a week. And while you're there, then you have to behave right and you have to do whatever they expect you to. You're restricted, highly restricted. Right? You're going to that new age person, you're also restricted. After they speak with you all these nice things and all that, then you have to put $100 on their table. You can't put, you know, 1 rupee. Yeah, that's $100. So I mean, it's not real. That's the thing. It's unfortunate, but because it's subtle and devotees are tuned into things that are subtle, because it's material, it's maybe more easily, seemingly more easily accessible to the mundane mind. Therefore, it appears that it's something more direct, but it's not necessary. You know. Okay. Anything else?
Yeah. Before you were explaining how when jiva comes in contact with material nature, then the quality of tatastha is lost. So then we see that because of lack of the spiritual vision, that there's not so much inspiration for spiritual activities and we become attracted to different men, like Mataji was saying, you know, some very bad or something like that. So then how can so we gain that tatastha quality, so then inspiration will come from seeing the spirit?
Well, we're actually not looking to gain the tatastha quality, because we are tatastha. What we're looking is to be under the protection of the internal potency. Being situated in tatastha, that's a problem, because you can't remain in the middle forever. You have to go, because you have to be active. So either you go one way or the other. So from our tatastha position, we've come into the material world. So therefore, the point is to get to the spiritual platform, the transcendental relationship with Krishna. So in getting there, we're going to go through the tatastha position, that's called liberation. But it's not a place where we are interested in or stop at all. It's just a place that's it's passed through on the way there. But there's no interest or any, you know, attention is given there. Is that what I'm saying? So then the next then we start eternal duties, household life and the material world. Nitya dharma, o samsara. So then I guess here he's going to explain how eternal duties, transcendental duties are performed within the material life. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama 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 Rama.